A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, Shift listeners. Okay, I'm doing an intro just because I had planned to do an episode this week on what is a crime, with like sexual assault and harassment, because I think that's like a big problem in our society. A lot of us don't know what is an actual crime versus what isn't. So I was going to do a whole episode on that, but I'm going to actually push that till next week because I had put out an Instagram post and so many people had messaged like stuff that had happened to them and they didn't realize it was a crime at the time. So I still need to filter through a lot of that. And this week was just absolutely insane because I was in LA and then I was back. And yeah, so thank you guys so much. But what I'm going to do for this episode was I have a podcast on another podcast app called, it's called Colin. And I just do episodes about living cheap in New York City. But my friend who was on today, her name is Chansu. She was absolutely amazing. And we kind of went off a bit of the topic and talked more about mental health a lot at the end. And I thought that was so interesting and kind of leads on from the episode with Maria Wojciechowski, because Chansu, not only she's a comedian, but she's a neuroscientist. So I was like, okay, I kind of want to put this episode on both. So it wouldn't be just on my Living Cheap podcast, it'd be on this, The Shift as well. And so the start of it, we just talk about her moving over from the UK to New York. And we talk a little bit about living cheap and how expensive it is here. But then we actually just talk about, you know, how we find America as immigrants. And then she explained a lot about her being a neuroscientist, and her PhD is in like studying, oh God, I'm after forgetting the word for it. Oh, but anyway, she talks about psychosis and schizophrenia. And she talks about psychosis and like weed and the effects of weed and when your brain is fully developed. So super interested. The only thing is that we did record this over a phone app. So it's like, it's not like the usual Zoom recorder. So the audio might not be as good at certain times. But I know you guys are used to that from when we were doing Zoom episodes online. So I figured it wouldn't be that big of an issue. And yeah, and she's just great as well. So it'd be nice to put her on both platforms as well. Like, she's super interesting, great guest. So really excited for you guys to hear this as well. And I'm not even sure if any of you guys have that, especially for the non-American listeners, might not have that app. So might not have a chance to listen to that on the Living Cheap. So it's nice to bring the two worlds together. But yeah, please go follow her everywhere online, obviously not in real life. And sign up to the Patreon.com/theshiftpodcast. Obviously there won't be a video for this episode, but there'll be a video next week when I do the crime episode. So yeah, and if anybody else has any stories and you want to email in, contacttheshift@gmail.com, or any guests you'd like me to get on. Enjoy this episode. So starts off about talking about living cheap, and then yeah, completely kind of went into more of a topic for the shift. But I love you guys, and yeah, I will talk to you next week.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought you'd be a great guest for this, because obviously this podcast is like loosely around like, well, not loosely, it is around being like living cheap in New York City, but sometimes like you can go a little off topic. But I thought, because you just moved to New York City from the UK, right?
Yeah.
That we could talk a bit about that and how much it costs, and if there was any advice you could give for anybody who's going to move from a different country, like around now. Because last time I moved, well, last time as if I've done it multiple times, but when I moved was like nearly 8 years ago.
Yeah, if I would give any advice to someone moving to New York City, I would just say don't.
I know, me too. And then you get stuck here, and you're like, all your friends are like, wow, look at you living the dream, and you're like, fuck, now I have to stay here.
Yeah, you have to stay. You have to make it look really glamorous, which it isn't at all. It's just all a front. It's just really good propaganda.
It is. That's what I say. I say, I have this bit that I'm working on now where I say like how in because in every other country, in every other country we see America like sort of portray themselves as this like great country and like it's the come and live the American dream. And then when we get here, Americans are like, go away, we don't like you. And you're like, what the fuck? Why did I? And then you're like, I know for me, especially anybody who lives like in Europe, I just never thought about how like lucky we have with like healthcare and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Oh, like I have so much savings just in case I like fall over here. Like I'm terrified.
So my plan is, if I fall over here, I'll go home to Denmark
Yeah.
and I get treated there.
Yeah, I remember I got I actually should probably introduce you quickly before we go, but it's Chansu. How do you pronounce your last name? Because I don't want to fuck it up.
Karabük.
Oh, wow. Okay, I would have fucked
Yeah.
that up. So I'm glad. Actually, it's funny because my Irish name is, which I never use. You just use it in school, in primary school, but it's like Cáithnín Ní Bhualadh, and it's
Wow.
the Ní Bhualadh is spelled NI and then BH. So I'm just like, oh, thank God that isn't my actual name, or the Americans just would have been like, what
Yeah,
the
no, for me it's been like all my life, Denmark, UK, the US. People are always like, wait, your name is Jansu, but it's with a C. How, wait, that doesn't make sense. It's like it's a different alphabet. Like people pronounce things differently in different places, but it's so difficult for people to understand.
And it is so true because even like so in Ireland the Irish name, so like a C and an I would be a K, so Killian, but Killian Murphy is like a famous actor, but no American can pronounce his name. They all be like, oh my God, I love that actor Cillian Murphy, and I'm like, what? It's so funny. But yeah, no, I when I first moved over here I had to get 3 stitches, and it was just when my like travel insurance had run out because I was like on a student visa, but that only covered like a short-term travel insurance, and so I didn't really understand the whole thing. But it was 3 grand to get the stitches cost, and now I didn't pay for it. I refused to. I kind of threatened that I would leave the country, and I got it haggled down. But it would have been cheaper for me to fly home, which is actually insane when you
That
think
is
about it.
so wild. Yeah, I'm very lucky. I'm on a good I have a good plan with my work. So like an insurance plan, but I know that if something happens, I will have to just go home. 'Cause you know, you're a comedian and I'm like we're not people that make a lot of money. So how are you
No,
ever going to pay for that?
100%. And then I feel awful for Americans in one way because, well, at least in that way, like I was even thinking, like if I ever got pregnant, I would just go home for like 4 months of the pregnancy, have the baby in Ireland, be sorted, come back. But I do like anytime you meet an American here, they're in so much debt. If it's that they had hospital debt or they have college debt, it's like everybody here, it's just normal to be in debt, which is like, oh, my nightmare.
It's so upsetting. It's sad. I mean, we definitely are so privileged that we can just be like, yeah, I'll just fuck off home, you know, I'll just be sorted out. And I definitely feel that way. But it's so sad that there's so many people here who just can't, like, they're stuck in this mess.
And so when you moved over, so you went from Denmark to the UK. How long were you living in the UK for?
For 7 years.
Oh wow, okay,
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely felt like home towards the end. I didn't want to leave it. It felt more like a home than Denmark did, to be honest. And then when I left, I had been a student there, so I had no savings. I think I had like £3,000, and I thought that would be sufficient. That was like one deposit, like one
I
month of
know.
deposit. It was nothing.
That's so funny because I came over with the same. I came over with like I think it was like €4,000, and that was like I thought I had all the money in the world, and same, it was gone in a first month's rent because deposit rent and last month's rent he asked for it, and I was like, oh my God, I only have €1,000 and no job.
Yeah, I went out with some friends one day, just like a week after I came, friends who were living in New York. And in one day, I spent like $400. I was like, oh, okay, I have no money. This is what I re that's when I realized that it was gonna be really rough here. It was in my first week. Yeah. And I asked my boss, I was like, listen, I've been a student my whole life. I'm supposed to furnish this place and pay for deposits, and I have like I don't come from trust fund. I have no savings. And he just like wired me $3,000.
Oh.
Was like, sort yourself out. It's like, yeah.
Okay, that's a good person.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
But obviously he also brought you over here. So he has to have like, he probably felt like some responsibility of being like, okay, yeah, I'm going to like invest in her now.
Right, I think so. Because it's like, you know, you ask people to move over to New York. It's this grand place. And it's sort of just an illusion, right? Mm-hmm. So I do think he felt a bit responsible.
Yeah, because even like that, like $3,000 or $4,000in Ireland and the UK would go so far, I feel.
Absolutely,
oh
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. Here it was, I mean, furnishing a place. I also just completely underestimated that. How much it takes to actually fill up an apartment with stuff yeah. that you need, starting from scratch, you know. Because I never had to do that. I moved around to many countries, but literally the only thing I had to buy again and again was a duvet and linen, you know.
Yeah, same. In Ireland, it's always furnished. Or
yeah.
Sorry, furnished.
Furnished? Uh-oh.
I don't even know what that word means. Does that mean like fire?
Yeah.
It's always on fire.
We burn people. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But no, 100%. Like, did you, and even for you, I feel like when you first come here, when you're moving to an unfurnished place, you don't know about how like you can go and pick up furniture off the street. Because I didn't learn that until like a couple of years in. And now like my apartment now is pretty much all stuff like off the street, bar, like things like bed and couch. But for the most part, like, and so you can get really good stuff. But I didn't know that when I moved over. So we had to like the same as you kind of furnish it. And it was so expensive. Oh, God, it was such hell.
Yeah, I was lucky that there was a July 4th sale right around the time I moved. Like, the Americans go crazy with sales when it's a holiday. That is wild to me. Like, why is July 4th? Why does it have anything to do with, you know, furniture at Wayfair? I don't get it. But I had to exploit that when I came. And yeah, that whole idea of picking up things on the street, that was just so uncomfortable for me, the thought of doing that. I still haven't gotten used to it. I've never done that because
honestly, I know like the same thing to, like how it could feel gross, because if something's on the street in Ireland, it's because somebody weed on it, or it's riddled in disease, or right. like yeah it's not. But some of my best finds have been off the street, and that's actually because I moved in with someone who, she's from Peru originally, but she lived here since she was 13, and she was like, no, street finds are the best. And
wow.
So like all of her like furniture was, and it was like nice furniture, was from the street. And you can go to like because rich people, well, that's the thing. Okay, everything you said like about the July 4th sales and the sales and all this stuff, because it's such a consumerist country, and then rich people just rotate their stuff within like maybe 6 months. So if you go to Williamsburg, you're gonna get like a nearly like a brand new chest of drawers just on the street on a Wednesday that's going out for trash. Like, it's wild, because wow. they just have so much money they don't know what to do with it.
Gosh, yeah, that's so real. That's such an American thing, like the whole having so much money that you don't know what to do with it. That it always baffles me how that inequality, that disparity, the wealth
yeah.
disparity, and how much things cost that don't need to cost that much. You know, like you go to a bar and or a restaurant that where the food might cost you $1,000 for a meal, but you're like, this stuff should never cost that much, because it's not right. Like the cost yeah. isn't that much ever. But
yeah,
people just want to spend their money.
And then there's such a, like, okay, so if you even mention, like, oh, you know, like, anything like socialism, because they link it to communism, and then there's such a fear of communism
yeah.
in this country, so they're like, no, our meal should cost $100. That chef, that chef is living his dream, and you're like, shut the fuck up. That's nobody needs this much money. And it's, yeah, you're right. I've never seen as poor, because I didn't even realize, I guess Ireland is like pretty socialist in a way. Mm-hmm. And so I've never seen that poor. And then when I first moved over, I lived with like a distant cousin in Greenwich, and I've never seen that rich. I couldn't get over it. It was like and again, no one needs that much money, but yeah. And to think that like neighborhoods, like, so Williamsburg, you can go and pick up all these, like, I used to babysit in Williamsburg. So it's like obviously like very, very rich families in certain area, and then you only have to take the train like 15 minutes out to East New York, where a lot of people are quite struggling. And it's like crazy that that's like so close to each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of shocking that that shift is so much. I've never seen that anywhere else. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Because in Ireland, there's like a rich area. Like in Dublin, there's like a rich area, and then you can go, and then there's like a working class area. But I feel like there's a lot of like, we have like a really good unemployment system, and like it's a thing called a dole. So you're never, no, people are never really like fucked the way they are here. And then free healthcare and all of that stuff. So yeah, I just,
for
yeah.
Sure. In Denmark too, it was, it's always growing up, you can never really tell who was wealthy or who wasn't, because of, you know, how much there is of disposable income, everyone could sort of afford the basics, you know. No one's really that poor. Not the way,
yeah.
Not what poor means here. So growing up, I could never tell who was wealthy because, you know, when we went to high school, it was a mixed group of people. So when we graduated, there's this custom in Denmark when you graduate high school, you're all on this truck and you go around, visit each person's home, and you just have a blast. Like it's a whole day where all the high school students are out and it's so much fun. And only when we did that, so that was 3 years of high school, I realized that some of my classmates had been like incredibly wealthy.
You're like, oh.
And we just never realized.
It's like the secret millionaire.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this whole time. That's the exact same in Ireland as well. I would never know someone was wealthy in my school until you went to their home. And I'm like, whoa, you have like multiple rooms here. This is what, two toilets? But yeah, or maybe like... Well, what was the other thing I was going to say as well about, there was something else about Ireland with wealth that you wouldn't, I just don't even think that the rich can get as rich as here. There's no 1% or whatever. Or clothes. So everybody in Ireland, no matter what your status, shops in a store called Pennies. So like, there's no like, and everybody in Ireland, even if you're wealthy, you're like, oh my God, I got this great deal. Like you kind of brag about when you get things like, you know, it's not like, whereas here you can tell who's wealthy because they're wearing like a specific like brand. Also in Ireland, I feel like it's embarrassing to show off your wealth. Like it's seen as like rude and maybe seen as a bit like imperialist British.
Yeah.
So I think it's like in us not to do that. So like if someone was rich, you wouldn't really see them wearing like, I can't even think of a rich fashion brand right now, but I just, you know, like here they have the bag, they show off with like the,
Yeah,
you wouldn't really see that in Ireland. Or if you did see someone with like a bag and you were like, oh, is that real? They'd be like, oh, no, it's fake. You know, like,
yeah, in Denmark, it's like that as well. There's this law called the law of Jente, which means like it's a humility law. It's unwritten and it's everyone in society needs to abide by this humility law. So you don't show off. You don't talk about your accomplishments. You don't show off your wealth. And that's also why, like, in Denmark, people are really bad at writing applications, I think, for like international jobs.
Yeah.
We just don't know how to sell ourselves in that way. That was like a huge thing for me when I moved to the UK and I was up against all these Americans for a scholarship.
Yeah.
It was so wild because they really learn salesmanship here, like at university, in college, they learn that. We definitely don't. And that just comes from this social concept of being humble. And
yeah,
it's like a heart of socialism.
It's so true because Irish people are terrible at selling themselves as well. Like if they were in an interview here and someone was like, oh, like, and so what's your greatest skill? They'd be like, oh, like, I'm just, you know, I'm okay. You know, it's like, and not good at like selling yourself. That was something I had to really like when I was posting like stand up on Instagram and all that stuff, being like, okay, I got to ignore my embarrassed Irishness and just put myself out there, because here they're instilled with a self-confidence that is like wild. Like in Ireland, your parents kind of shut that out of you because they're like, oh, like they'll be like, oh, like don't be too big in your boots, or don't be like thinking you're too good or whatever. And then here the parents like, you're the best in the whole universe. It's like such a difference. And I think like we could all like meet in the middle. I think Irish should be a little like, ah, if you want to go chase your dream, go for it, like put yourself out there. And then here they could be like, because I think the problem with them telling them that they're the best and they can do everything is that then there's like such a downfall when they aren't, and it could be like, you might be the best and you might not, but don't worry about it, you know.
Yeah. Just do you anyway. Yeah, my mom always very self-deprecating culture as well. My mom would always go, if I wasn't like abiding by something, she'd be like, oh, you think you're better than us just because you went to college, you know? It's always that thing of like putting you down a little bit so you keep your feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Don't become this like obnoxious person, but yeah.
I remember when I was small, there was like a picture of me as a baby. I was probably like 10 or something. And then my neighborhood's friend was in and we were looking at the baby and I was like, oh my God, I was so cute as a baby. And then afterwards, I got in so much trouble. My mother was like, you can't say that. That's like, you have to be humble. You know, you don't know. She might have been an ugly baby. So that could be offensive to her. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you have to spare the uggos, Katie. Come
on. Yeah, you gotta spare the uggos.
That's so funny. But yeah, I need to do the whole like picking up furniture on the street thing. I need to go walk around, you know, upper east side, upper west side, and just look for things. I just never am. Like, how do you take it home though? You see a chest of drawers. How do you pick that thing up and take it home?
You need to, like, I took everything with my roommate. So if we saw something, we would run back and get it. This is where we live in Astoria. Or one time my boyfriend carried, like, a big thing home for me. And it was funny. It was, like, a bookshelf that is, like, at an angle. It's not right. But I just really liked it. And so it's now in my bedroom, but, like, up against a thing so it doesn't fall over. But but it's still on a bit of an angle. Everything I have is on a bit of an angle, to be honest. But I think you can make a day of it. So maybe if, like, you and Sabine wanted to go around and me, I'll come with you. But, like, I think if you get a few friends and just be like, look, we need to find the trash day and we need to pick up some stuff and I need your help, because you can get some gems, like, especially in the rich area. Yeah, Upper East Side would be a great place to hit.
Absolutely. I found also this charity shop, not charity, just secondhand thrift shop in on the Upper West Side around like 80th Street. It was so good. Like all the stuff I found in there were just amazing. And I think that was like the only thrift shop I've been in here where I've actually been really impressed with the stuff that was in.
Do you remember the name of it?
I don't remember the name. I can definitely find the address and send it to you.
Oh, great.
It was somewhere around like Amsterdam or Columbus and somewhere in the 80s.
Yeah, I think that's such a good idea to go into thrift shops in like rich areas, because rich people just, and it makes them feel good about themselves too. So that's their little bit of like resolving their guilt. They're like, oh, I'll give my Prada whatever to this charity shop so you can get some good stuff.
You could get some really good stuff up there. Everything I bought, like leather jacket for like $15.
I did this. I was just like, I'll look up online and see whenever there's like sales. So like yesterday, this website like PacSun had like one day only 50% off. But then there was like, oh, if you use this coupon and if you sign up to the rewards. So I got like an extra 15% off because the coupon, and then I got an extra $5 off because the rewards. So I'll always do things like that, like find the day that they're like doing their sale. And even if it's, because it's usually stuff that's out of style for Gen Z. I'm a millennial, that's still style for me.
Yeah.
Like they're getting rid of all the high-rise pants because these young girls don't want to wear high-rise anymore. They want to wear low-rise.
That upsets me so much.
I will never wear low-rise again.
No, we're not going back. Never again. I can't.
I want to feel comfortably bloated in my pants.
Right? Yeah. You want to squeeze that. Like for me personally, I need that muffin top to be in. You know, not like hanging over something.
Yes. No, God. So, yeah, I think for our age group, there's great sales now.
I do this thing I'm not really proud of, but if I'm going to go, let's say, H&M, and I need all the basics, I sort of create a new email account, and then I can get the 20% discount, because then you can start a new membership.
Yeah, that's great. That's not bad. That's great. I have so many emails from doing stuff like that. Remember Netflix used to give a free month? I had like 10 emails just to get like a free month each time, but then they canceled it and they don't do it anymore. I think it's because of people like me.
Oh, yeah. Some places have like, they check your IP address. So
they
can tell if it's the same, if it's the same one or like the same computer or something like that. They can actually see it. But yeah, with shops like H&M, you can totally just get away with it. Yeah, and I do that. It's like new running gear. I go to Nike and start a new email address just so that I can get.
That's so smart.
Yeah. Life hacks for poor people.
Yeah, and Nike and Adidas or like for people who want to buy clothes that I feel that will last, like run like what's it called, like sports places, because they last. They like la they are built to like for you to run in. I'm not running in them. I'm just wearing them to walk around. They last me years.
Yeah, I run in them and they still last for years.
And wait, I wanted to ask you, when you moved to Britain and then before you moved here, were you worried about the stuff with Brexit being a European?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I didn't know about Brexit was not on the radar when I moved. It was really interesting because I left Denmark. So I left Denmark in 2013. I went to study abroad in California, and then I went to Portugal as an extension, as a part of my master's. And then I really felt disenfranchised from Denmark just because it's like a really racist country. And so when I came back, I was like, I'm gonna move abroad. I'll just rather be a foreigner and be treated like a foreigner in a country where I'm a foreigner, you know, my own country. So I moved to the UK, and then like within the next year, they had the whole Brexit thing, and it wasn't like a huge concern because well, I guess it was like we didn't know what was going to happen, whether all of us other Europeans would just be sent home, but they sort of made us feel like, oh, it'll take ages before it's actually in effect. And it wasn't actually in effect until I left. It got into effect in January, I think, 2021, and I left in May.
And would that have affected you if you would have wanted to stay on there?
Well, I got, because I had been there for a while, I got like a leave, a remain thing. I forgot what it's called, but it was like a status on
Oh, like
my
a per like a permanent resident type of thing.
kind of thing. Yeah, you're not a permanent resident, but you have leave to stay,
Oh,
basically.
that's great.
Yeah, so we all got that basically. We just had to, it was kind of a crazy thing. So when they said, okay, now we have to apply for this thing, and we have to be legally in the country in that way. So we applied, and there was a whole mess where anyone who applied from, let's say, Oxford University, we got it in a day. And people who are just like regular, like working people, it took them weeks to get it.
Jesus.
It was really messed up. Like the Home Office definitely showed preference to people of a certain, you know, like what they consider class, right? It was so ridiculous. And there was a big, I think there was a big article about that when it was happening. They were definitely just like bullying people working in the country, you know?
Yeah, it's awful, the whole thing. It's really scary for any immigrant when you go anywhere. Like how quickly things can change. Like even coming to America, everybody's always like, okay, gotta get my visa, gotta get my permanent resident, gotta get my green card before something happens.
That's so wild. Yeah, I was very adamant that I would not move to the US if Trump won again. And that would have been, yeah, I wanted to come out here. I knew I wanted to live in New York, but if Trump had won again, there was no way I would come out here. Because like that's the uncertainty, right? Not feeling safe, feeling this like normalizing, kind of legalizing hate speech. It's just horrifying.
Yeah, and for people who are on like student visas and work visas, if you weren't on the if you didn't have a permanent resident card or a green card, a lot of my friends who were brought over here to do PhDs or to work post their PhD in like what's it called, Columbia and NYU, were stuck here for, and even with the pandemic, so it was kind of fine, but they were kind of like in this in between, like while they were waiting to find out, but they couldn't leave the country because they didn't have like an actual green card. So it was very stressful for them for the 2 years.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I'm on something like that now too, where yeah, it has to, I couldn't get the visa I'm on when COVID was happening. I had to have like a special permission
Oh,
in order
yeah.
yeah. That's like a weird COVID thing that it was Trump started it, but then Biden didn't lift it. So yeah, that was stressful. Coming here back last year was so stressful.
And do you think you'll stay in America, or do you think you'll go back to the UK long term?
Yeah, I'm very I'm very open to what the future is going to bring. I kind of want to just be flexible and be like, all right, this is where the best opportunities for me are, so I'll stay. But I think if I start looking for, you know, safety and security, then I might have to just go back to Europe, because I love London. I think I like London more than I like New York, and I would totally move back and work there. So if they allow us, I don't know what the situation will be if I was to go back to the UK, because now I'd no longer have that permit because I left. But I think I would consider. What about you? Would you go back to Ireland?
No, I don't think so. Maybe when I'm older. It depends on how, like, you know, so there's either with comedy, there's success and then there's fame. So if I got like enough success / fame, like if I got fame and I could live anywhere and I could just like hop on a plane, who knows, you know? I don't know. I don't think I like New York and stuff like that, but I can't imagine having a kid in New York. If I had a kid, it seems a bit like hell.
Yeah, that's sort of where I'm at too, because, you know, could go back to Europe and your kid would be secured for life, right? Even if anything happened to you, they will be taken care of. There's an education system that's free and more equal, like not entire. In the UK, it's definitely not equal, but in Denmark, I would say it is. So it would be a better place to raise a child for sure. But that's like nowhere where I am in my life. So,
yeah, I still got like 3-4 years before my eggs start melting away.
How old are you?
I'll be turning 32 in October, so I guess 31 and a half.
Okay, I turned 32 back in December. And it's funny because I went on a date with someone and he asked me what my timeline was for having a kid.
Oh, wow.
Timeline? I was like, well, I guess as long as the oven still works, I would like to have it before that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'll bake the bread before the oven gets cold, basically.
And come here, was that guy Slovakian?
No, he's American.
Okay, because I had a date with a guy like a long, long time ago. I ended up dating him for a while, but literally he was a Slovakian guy. But one of the first questions he asked me was like, oh, what's your timeline for a kid and what's your 5-year plan and all this stuff? And I remember being like, whoa, this is the first date.
That guy asked the same questions. Is that from some book or something?
I don't know. I was thinking it must have been the same guy, because I've had thousands of dates over here before my boyfriend and no guy ever asked that. They wouldn't even touch that. They don't even want to have the conversation of relationship. Never mind.
Yeah.
What's your fucking 5-year plan?
So, because most of them just never want to consider the thought of a relationship. But then there are these occasional guys who are like, you know, they have this plan in their minds and they have to stick by it and they have to check off all these points, like having a kid, having a relationship and a house. That's just so stressful, living like that.
Yeah, but in one way, I think those two type of guys have to meet in the middle, because I had this like Irish relationship. He like is like a matchmaker, so people come to him in Ireland when they've like used Tinder, everything, and nothing else works. And he said a lot of the men who come are these like 40 plus men who all of a sudden are like, oh, I want to like settle down now and have kids, but they don't want to date women their own age. They want to date women who are younger, so they have unrealistic expectations, and they could be even like 50 plus, and it's like, well, what, you want to have a kid now? So he was saying like men don't think about the future good enough, and they don't plan it out, and they don't realize that really if they want to have kids, they should be thinking about it in their like early 30s and making that kind of plan. Now, I think with that guy, he didn't need to say that on the first date, but he's probably in that mindset where he's probably like, okay, well, I want to be this certain age when I have my kid and all that.
Yeah. I think that was the same case for the guy I went on a date with. But I was making this joke the other day about how, you know, guys our age are like, yeah, you know, I'm too young to settle down. And I'm just like, you're like 2 years away from a midlife crisis. What is going on? You know, you need to think about these things as well. But maybe not making it a rule. I feel like that's more, you know, living that stringently and being just checking people off because they don't fit into a mold.
Yeah,
doesn't seem right, but
no, absolutely. That's very intense. And so we got I feel like three and a half years before you have to worry about it. It's so stressful for women that we really have to like think about it.
For sure. Yeah, I don't want to. I wish I had some big tech job that allowed me to freeze my eggs and I didn't have to worry about it. Because that's what they do. If you work for Apple, even your spouse can get to just freeze their eggs.
Wow. Okay, I
Yeah.
didn't know that. That's part of their wow, there's that's okay. Maybe I'll okay at 33 if things aren't working out, or like 34, I'll just go get a job at
I
Apple.
love it. I love that confidence.
Yeah, each meeting I'll be like, so when can I freeze my eggs?
That's really why I'm here. So please. Yeah.
And when you came over from England, did it cost a lot to move over? Like the flight and everything, the bringing your stuff, or did you just like when I came over, I just got a regular flight. I just brought a suitcase and I was kind of like, oh, I'll rebuild my life here.
Yeah, because I had accumulated so much in the UK, there's a lot that I was not willing to give up, like mementos that I didn't want to just leave back. So I had shipped off like two or three big suitcases.
Yeah.
Yeah, two big suitcases to my friend's place in Brooklyn. And I had done that like a while back so that, I knew what I had. When I actually finally left, I could just leave with a suitcase. I ended up having to, get more suitcases because, you always have more stuff than you think, but it was just a regular flight with one extra suitcase, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, as cheap a flight as I could find. I think I had like two layovers. And yeah, I had my friend pick me up at JFK. It was so lovely. And I
That's
stayed with him for a month.
great you had him. Do I know him?
No, he's not a comic. He's just a medical doctor. We met. He's just a medical doctor. No, we met at the at Cambridge at the university. So when I moved here, he was really helpful, and he let me just like sleep on his couch for like a whole month until I sorted out my housing. So I was really lucky to have him here.
That's amazing. Yeah, you need that. I was lucky too because I had like a very, very distant Irish American relative. And they were like obsessed with our family because they'd like found the lineage and they wanted to, and they're like very like trying to like Irish Americans can like really like fetishize Irish people because they're like, "Oh, tell me about my people." And I'm like, "I don't know. I watch American TV shows." So, but yeah, they were very nice and let me stay with them for 2 months while I figured it out. So it was, yeah, it's like, I mean, anybody coming over here, if you think you're gonna try to just get an apartment straight away, it's not, you nearly need like find your distant relatives, okay? Do that 23andMe.
So maybe that should be the advice we give people. Find your distant relative and
Yeah.
move in with them.
Yeah. And tell them
Wow.
all the all your folklore and you that's like your currency for staying
Right.
with them, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we want to be Kurdish, to be honest. Like, 'cause if I find a Danish person, they're gonna just look at me and they're gonna be like, "Yeah, you're not Danish. I don't know who the hell you're fooling."
Ugh, that's awful.
So actually, we found out that Lindsay's family are Danish, and I was just like, "That makes so much sense. You look so much more Danish than
She looks very blonde and
I do."
blue-eyed. Yeah.
She looks so archetypically Danish. So I don't think I could sell that. And if I was to go for Kurdish people, yeah, I don't think that anyone would care.
Yeah.
Because we're like all spread all over the world anyway. So yeah,
Yeah,
it's just sad.
there is like for Irish people, there is like a very, very helpful Irish Center in Long Island City, and I mean they're very the people are very nice, and it's not just for Irish people. Like I feel like any immigrant who comes in, they're like, because I remember speaking to someone else being like, oh, they were like not Irish at all, but they were like, yeah, I found out about it, so I went in, and they were very helpful. But it's a center that you go in, and they'll give you like free everything basically, like if you need help with your taxes or moving over or job or how to get your social security
Wow.
number. Yeah, they're amazing. They have comedy shows there as well and like music events. It's pretty cool actually. So it's in Long Island City. It's called like New York Irish Center or something like that. But But yeah, they're very helpful. So
So cool.
yeah, I think if you find like you can find like organizations like that, like if you're religious or because it's funny because even with the Irish, there's like the Irish Center, but then there's like different places where like down to your county here, like there'll be like Longford Knights or whatever, and you can meet people from your actual county. I didn't really do a lot of that because when I came over, I wanted to meet people from different places. It wasn't like I didn't want to be stuck with Irish, but there is like, yeah. You know what I wanted to ask you though? So you're a neuroscientist.
Yes.
That's wild. So you study the brain. That's
I do.
amazing.
It's okay.
No, it's so cool. You know what the thing my friend said, and maybe this is wrong, but because education is so expensive in America, it's really hard for people to get a PhD to become like this like super qualified in specific areas that they actually America needs to bring in immigrants from like different countries who have the PhD. So like because when Trump was going on about like we need to get rid of immigrants and stuff, my friends were like, well, they have us here like because no one else is qualified to do it because it's too expensive.
Yeah, and also, I guess science is very international in its essence. The idea is you bring in people who are the best at what they do from all over the world. So if you take that away, then who's going to do your science? Columbia, Harvard, all of these big institutes that do amazing research, it's not Americans that do it. It's full of foreigners from all over the world. So then they're not, because they want to be like the top tier institutes in science, but they won't be if they just kick people out. That's for sure not. In my institute alone, I would say perhaps half of the people here are foreigners.
Yeah, I used to work in this bar on the Upper East Side, and so everybody who was there from oh, it's a hospital, but it's like all it was all immigrants. They were all brought over to work at this hospital, and I mean, you'd rarely hear an American accent when they would come in to drink after their like, like their 5 p.m., 6 p.m. happy hour, but yeah, it was all immigrants. I forget what. Oh, Mount Sinai, that was it.
Oh, Mount Sinai. Yeah, that makes sense. I was also interviewing for jobs there before I chose this place I am now.
And what exactly is your job? So what exactly do you do?
I work on schizophrenia research. I look at the molecular basis of it. So I've always been super fascinated by the brain, and I used to work on brain aging and looking at, some of those diseases that happen with age, like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease, and how we can sort of prevent them in a natural way. And now I sort of shifted onto neuropsychiatry, and I'm really interested in knowing what the molecular basis is.
And
So lab work, yeah.
when you find that out, will you be able to help develop a kind of like whatever it is to reverse schizophrenia?
It would be more of prevention rather than reversal, because we believe that some of that happens when the neural, circuit is formed, that there is a problem in some of those connections. That's at least our hypothesis. And if that's true, then it would all happen during development. And then it might manifest later in life, but the real issue would be during your development. So then you'd have to just prevent that from happening rather than reverse it. But
And
I
so, would development as in like when you're being made in the womb, or development as in early childhood?
guess early childhood and all up until, well, your brain is really forming until you're like 25.
Oh, wow.
So it would be during that process. And that's also why we know that, for instance, cannabis, THC, can induce psychosis, for instance. And that's because it affects the brain while it's still maturing, right? So a lot of adolescents experience psychosis from it, which can eventually turn into schizophrenia. And that's because the brain is still developing.
I actually never smoked weed. I only smoked it once in Amsterdam, just because it was like legal, and my boyfriend at the time was kind of like, we have to do it. But I never did smoke it because my dad, well, my mother has like undiagnosed like definitely serious mental health issues.
Uh-huh.
But like in Ireland, it's very much, and I feel like the generation before was, it'd be better to be crazy than to be actually labeled crazy. But the, because there's a, it's a bad stigma around mental health, which I'm sure is gonna get better as times go on. But the, when my dad told me that, like he was the one who told me that like weed can really affect people's mental health, I never touched it as a kid, because I was like, if there's anything inside, I'm like locked up, I'm keeping it fucking locked up. If there's any like fucking gene mental health issues, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And same thing here. I have a lot of relatives with mental health disease, which I guess is why I wanted to study it and try to understand it. Because of that, when I found out that there was this link, and I saw it as well. I saw some relatives of mine be affected by weed and see how their psychosis went into. It started with paranoia, right? And then it turned into psychosis and then schizophrenia. So I never touched any of that until I was like 30, because then I was like, okay, it's over for me now. My brain is
Yeah.
fully matured into whatever it needs to be.
That's so interesting. You're like, okay, I'm good now. Let's get high.
I'm safe. I still don't like it. It just doesn't feel right to do it.
Yeah, when I did it once in Amsterdam, I didn't like the feeling of feeling like wobbly or like not on, like I like feeling like, okay, this is a couch. I know it's a couch, you know? I don't feel like, oh, yeah, no, I don't like the unreality or in whatever that word is. Wait, can I ask you one more thing? How would you plan to prevent it then in young people? How could you isolate it then if it's just developing, or how would that work out?
Yeah, it's hard to say, but we might be looking at gene editing or preventing or just being so there are these genetic components that we're studying. So we believe that there are these receptors on the cell surface of the neurons that need to connect properly to each other. And we have identified in schizophrenia patients, bipolar patients, in autism patients, that there might be a genetic link between a mutation in these receptors and the disease, pathogenesis. We don't quite know. That's what we think is happening. So if that's true, if there's a mutation in your DNA that is actually causing these receptors to not connect properly, then what you could do is you could edit that, right? You could Gene editing is becoming more and more common now. That is already norm is already being done by big pharma for specific kinds of diseases. But if you could change that gene back to what it was supposed to be, then perhaps you could fix it before. But that would mean genetic testing at a very early age. But and it would sort of be monitoring existing patients, to know that if they have children, would they have these mutations too? It's a very long-term plan, and I don't even think we have the tools to really do that properly yet.
Okay, but I do think that's great, because I have another podcast called The Shift, and I don't know if you know, she's a comedian, Maria Wojciechowski, but she has bipolar. So we were just talking about, because The Shift is like a Irish-based podcast,
Okay.
We were, trying to talk about like mental health and stigma, and so she's obviously very open about it, which Irish people would never be open if they had like a mental health issue. So she was really great, but she was yeah, just saying like how there's not enough research going into this, and the more we talk about it, the more there. So it's great to hear you saying that you guys are like working on it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely much less. It has much less attention than other fields of brain research. When I told my P professor in Cambridge, the person whose lab I joined for my PhD, I told him I wanted to study the molecular basis of neuropsychiatric diseases, and he was like, yes, you should. More people should go into that field because there just aren't enough people working on it. Because a lot of what we do, it has to be translational, right? You get funding from big agencies if they can see that you might find the cure for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease, diseases that affect a lot of people and is a huge burden on society, essentially, because it affects people, it prevents people from working, it costs a lot. So for schizophrenia and those kinds of and bipolar, you don't have a lot of funding going into these fields because there's no clear way out. it's very difficult to understand. It's very difficult to actually study this stuff. So we're hoping that with more newer technologies, that more and more people will get into this field and more funding will be put into it, because that's really the only way that we can figure it out. Like, look at COVID research, right? You had everyone in the world just working on the thing, and then within like 6 months, they had a solution.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, because even like as well, then if more people, if there's more knowledge about it, more people would be willing to come forward with A, their kid, or B, themselves, to be like, okay, what's going on? My head's a bit messed up. Or maybe like, oh, my, like, you know, for me, like my mother and her aunt. So there's definitely a history. I think with my kid, I'll 100% monitor it and be like, how you feeling? Feeling good?
Prevent all kinds of trauma that could be triggering, you know. Like, keep them as safe and it's as loving conditions as possible, because negligence for sure is a trigger. Like, that kind of trauma, when you feel negligence as a child, can be a trigger for psychiatric diseases.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, it's, I don't know.
But I think the tides are turning. I think things are talking about, people are talking about this in a different way. So last weekend I might be taking in some students over the summer, some high school students, to, like, you know, have them in the lab and sort of teach them about lab work. And I was interviewing last weekend all these kids, and there were two kids that came up to me and said, my brother has autism, so I really want to, like, join the lab and learn more. Mm. And they had such a good understanding. One of the kids, she was 15, and she was talking about her brother's disease, and she was like, people treat it as if it's a disease, but it's actually more like an advantage, because my brother can see colors, and he just has a different understanding of what norm is. But if we were all thinking that way, then that would be norm. We'd be like, wow, that is so profound. And she's like 15, right? And that's the next generation. Yeah, that's the next generation. So I think things will be better.
Yeah, it's definitely not like that in Ireland, but we're usually a generation behind with stuff. Even though right now Ireland's a little more progressive because of, you know, we voted for abortion rights, and here it's becoming. But I think with things like that, like, I feel like the next, like, we're always a generation behind to be like understanding our feelings or, you know, positivity. Like, when I moved over here, it was all like yoga and like self-help and like that. I never experienced that in Ireland, and now I'm seeing it come up a bit more now, where people are like, you know, it, like, oh, you can do yoga and that's not embarrassing, for whatever reason. I don't know why we were embarrassed by it. I guess it's like the tight pants.
Well, that's definitely the same thing in Middle Eastern culture. I didn't tell my mom that I was going to therapy because I was sure she would think that I had a mental health disease. She'd be like, have you gone crazy, all that studying and being abroad? You just crazy now? Like, that would definitely be her way. Whereas my dad was more like, oh, it's good, it's like prevention of worse things, you know. But yeah, for my mom, it would have just been like, all right, my daughter's crazy now, that's it.
So true. My dad 100% needs, he's great, but like, he could do with going to therapy, because he's had a lot of stuff happen to him. And then he's like, we were at home at the, you know, and I his wife is 9 years younger than him, so it's like a definitely. And she's from the city, he's from the country, so it's like she's 30 years younger than him sometimes, you know. And so when I started going to therapy, she was like, yeah, you should go, like, if you had a sore back, you'd get your back massaged, it's good for the brain, it's just a brain massage. And then we were talking about dad, and I was like, I think you need therapy. And he was like, no, I just block everything out, you know, whatever happened in the past. And I'm like, that's like an actual condition though. That's like, you're meant to go to therapy for that. You have like PTSD. And he's like, nah, it's fine, you know, there's people in, and he'd be like, there's people in wherever, and he would say like a worse off place. And I'm like, that's also, you're just diminished, you're devaluating your experience. And he's like, nah, it's fine, I don't want to go there. So that's like, yeah, it's very much like my sister's generation, she's like 15, will start more going to therapy. But in Ireland, it was always like we prided ourselves because of that Freudian thing where he said the Irish, you can't give therapy for, so like we prided ourselves in that, which is awful.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely how people are in the Middle East too. That's how my family is. Like, my brother has the same upbringing as me, same parents, right, same life conditions. He would be he desperately needs therapy, but there's no way whatever I could say could convince him to go to therapy. There's just like absolutely no way he'd do that.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's hard as well anyway to convince anybody to go to therapy because it always feels like you could be like, oh, you have to be so careful the way you say it. Like I was saying to someone else definitely needs therapy. And I go and it's really cheap. It's like this Valera Health, so it's $15 a month. And I was like, oh, if this person doesn't have money, they could use this. But you have to be very careful how you say it because you have to be like, oh, well, I go and it's great. But if you're like, oh, you need therapy, someone who needs it gets really defensive. And they just like, are like, what are you saying? Like, what you think there's something wrong with me? And it's like, no, it's really helpful.
It is so helpful. For the longest time, I was not opposed to it, but I didn't see myself do that because I always knew that there were things that I needed to deal with. But I kind of thought that that's what kept me going. You know, that's why I was being successful at all these things was because I had that problem. You know, that just the pain that kept me going. And I was like, what if I go to therapy? And they open Pandora's box, either I'll get worse and I'll be a mess, or I'll lose that factor that makes me who I am. And that was like a real concern for me. And then at some point, I kind of just decided, oh, well, I'm just gonna go to this counselor. You know, a counselor is not a real psychiatrist or a therapist, they'll be fine. So, and then I went, and it was just kind of life-changing how good that felt. And it took several sessions, but when I finally started doing real work, it was such a blessing.
I completely agree with you because, and everybody says that. I remember my dad saying something about how like it's good to lock things up, which is like so bad. And I was the same. I thought that if they opened like the closet door, like all the shit would fall out that you've shoved in it. But it's like, and I was so hardworking and like obsessive and thought that as well that that was like my drive to be successful. And I will say, ever since I've gone to therapy, I am more successful in comedy because I'm fucking chilled out. Because I was actually quite sensitive and defensive, but just because I hadn't dealt with my own issues. And then like I'm in a healthy relationship, and I don't feel like angry with the people I was angry with before from my childhood. I just feel like whatever, I've kind of come to terms with it. And it's like I'm the same as you, life changing. And all it took was, because this is the thing, it's not like my friend was like, but you can talk to your friends. And I'm like, no, I would never dump that private and be that vulnerable and like also dump all that shit on a friend. With a therapist, you can just go blech and then not feel guilty about it.
And they sort of have the tools, right? You know, I feel like your friends are always playing, you know, they're always on your side. They're always like try to calm you down. Whereas a therapist really challenges you at times. My therapist would go, you know, on something I had said on the first session, he'd bring it up on the sixth session and he'd say, on the first session, this is what you said. How do you think about what you just said in relation to that? It was just like, whoa. That is crazy. Like no one listens to you that intently and tries to like rationalize or understand what you're saying, right? Whereas he was like really trying to understand where I was coming from and not pushing me, just occasionally challenging, but just letting me control the pace of what I wanted to talk about and when I wanted to talk about it. So I really, and then in the end, you kind of realize that it doesn't have to change you. You know, your pain is still there. It's just you learn to deal with it in a different way and come to peace with it.
No, absolutely. Oh my God, this is a great episode, and I've definitely taken up too much of your time. Where can people find you?
Yes, I am on Instagram as Jansu this that spelled CanSuDisDat. That was supposed to be a placeholder, but I kind of just like it now.
I like it too. I never actually even read it properly. Now that you're saying it, I'm like, oh, cool.
It kind of just sounds like a ethnic last name. Yeah, we didn't get to talk much about living cheap in New York City, but I don't really know how to do that anyway.
We talked a lot about moving over, and I think that's interesting for people to hear, and mental health. Okay, everybody who lives in New York City needs to go to a therapist, so it's just great to know about it, and it's always great to like advocate for. So yeah, 100%.
For
But
sure.
thank you so much.
Thank you. And can I plug my show?
Yeah, plug everything.
It's amazing. So we're doing this comedy show that just celebrates and centers women of color and non-binary people of color. It's called Fuck It Up. Fuck standing for Femmes of Color. And it's on May 28th, 9:30 p.m. at the Duplex.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. And yeah, anybody who's in New York, go to the show, because your last show was like apparently like sold out and like the best crack, and there was food too, right?
There's always food if people want to bring it.
Wow. Yeah, I remember, 'cause Sabine was on your last show, right?
No, Sabine wasn't on the last show. No.
Oh, maybe she told me about it, but she told me
It's
it was great. It was at New York, right?
New York Comedy Club. And then the previous one was at the Duplex, which is where we'll be back. Yeah.
Okay, amazing. Okay, perfect. I'm gonna let you go and see you soon. Let's grab tea soon.
For sure. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.